You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout. You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 135 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm delighted to be joined this morning by Jodie. Jodie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. We're here to talk about your daughter, Libby, who, amongst other conditions that we will talk about, has Hirschsprung's as well. So we'll talk obviously a little bit about Hirschsprung's, but lots of other associated conditions as well. Would you like to take us back to the beginning with Libby?
Yeah, of course. Firstly, thank you for doing this podcast. It's amazing that you're raising awareness of this and, yeah, just incredible. Episode number today, 135.
Yeah, it's been going a while.
That's amazing. Amazing, amazing. So our story basically started with Libby during my 12-week scan. We have two other boys who are 5 and 4, totally healthy. So I go for my 12-week scan. I think, I know the drill. You go, you have your scan, all lovely. We go for our scan and the midwife scan of me is just taking a very long, long, long time. And I sort of started to pick up that maybe there was something that wasn't quite right. And she said, I'm going to go get in another midwife just to check. And at that point, I saw my husband just like go white. And I was thinking like, gosh, what's going on here? Because I was a little bit naive to what was going on. And then basically the midwife says to us, Mr. and Mrs. Hirschsprung, could you please follow me this way? And she leads us through the hospital to this room. And this whole thing is a bit of a blur. But what I do remember is there was a poster on the wall of this room saying, sometimes scans don't go your way. We're here to help you. And that was my first instinct of, okay, I know how this works. I've got two boys. I've done this before. What's going on here? And a woman comes in. She sort of like tilts her head to the side and says, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm going to be your counselor through this pregnancy. And actually, I'm actually a counselor aside from this. And I was thinking, I'm only the counselor. I am a counselor. What do you mean I'm a counselor for this pregnancy? What's going on? I basically began to explain to me that there's a number called the NT, the nuchal trans something. And that basically you want that number to be below 3.5 on the scan. And our number was 3.9. And it's basically an indicator for certain heart conditions, certain chromosome abnormalities, and certain genetic complications also. So at that point, basically, we're put on more of a high-risk pregnancy. And then fast forward a little bit, we're having another scan. And they told us that they found a hole in Libby's heart, at which point Great Ormond Street, we were under UCH. And Great Ormond Street came to meet with us. And they were very matter-of-fact about it, that she's got a hole in her heart, she's going to be born, and then we're going to fix her hole, and she's going to live a perfectly normal, happy life. So that was sort of the energy that I was sort of going into my birth with. And then we have her, and that's all normal and fine. But after birth, she basically wasn't really able to eat. She wasn't eating at all. And her stomach was getting very, very distended. And a child needs to poo between the first 72 hours, basically. And Libby hadn't done that. And again, her stomach was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So from there, they transferred us into the ICU at UCH. And we were there for only a few hours before they said, you need to go to Great Ormond Street because she's getting quite sick, basically. And so we go to Great Ormond Street and they put us on like a surgical ward. And immediately they do these things called washouts. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into. But
much as you like.
they try and basically do things called washouts, which is basically trying to remove the meconium that's stuck inside of her to try and remove it. But that wasn't successful. So by day three, when she was 3 days old, they said to us that she needs to be fitted with a stoma because that's going to save her life. And I said, okay. But, and they come and they tell you all the risks of anaesthetic, and they're like verbally explaining like the risks that, well, I mean, if you open up a packet of paracetamol, you've got very scary risks associated with that. Also, this was like quite major surgery on a 3-day-old baby. And they finish off these risks and said, the last one is we have to tell you that this could end up in like her not making it. To which point I said, but do we like, no, like, no, do we have a choice? And they said, no, like she needs this because she is not able to pass her meconium. There's clearly some blockage going on in her digestive system. So we have to fit her with a She goes for the surgery. It is the most nerve-wracking experience I've probably ever had. And there's been quite a few of those experiences in the last 8 months. But you hand over your baby who's 3 days old, and I just remember saying to them, just please take care of her, like please look after her. And she comes up for surgery, it's like quite a few hours later, and thank goodness she's doing well. And then the next hurdle comes that the stoma is not working.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
In a tube to try and in her nose to try and bring out some of the sort of the stuff that's stuck inside of her out of her nose. They're syringing it out of her nose because it's still not coming out in the stoma. And I'm Googling how long should it take for a stoma to work, and they're telling me, oh yeah, we have a bit of time, we can wait, hopefully it will work. But then that time passed and it still wasn't working. And a week went past where it wasn't working. And one of the hardest parts of this experience was actually we couldn't constantly link between being with Libby at the hospital and being home with our boys to try and make their life as normal as possible. So one of us would be there till very late and then one of us would go early in the morning. And every morning in that week, we would come in and we'd say, is it working? And like the look on their face, and they'd say, no, it's not working yet, but let's just give it another day. And then they got to the point where they said, today, if it doesn't start working, we're going to have to go back inside with another major surgery to see why it's not working. Maybe there's a blockage somewhere. Another thing they did in that week is they put some contrast through her, through a line to be able to see through her intestines if there was a blockage and to see maybe that was why the stoma wasn't working, but there was no blockage. So in a way, it would have been a useful thing. Okay, there's a blockage, we can deal with it. But to have no blockage and the stoma still wasn't working was quite a scary reality. So they got to the day where they said, if it doesn't work by today, then we're going to need to go back inside because her stomach, again, is incredibly distended and she was in pain, basically. So it happened that day it started working and it was an incredible day. We were jumping in Great Ormond Street. I felt like I'd won the lottery. I was like, this is amazing. And it started working. And from then, basically, she was able to start eating solids. Starting to drink some milk. And with very tiny amounts, we started with 2 milliliters of milk to see if she could handle it and see like what we wanted is for output to go out rather than up. And so output was going out and slowly went from 2 mils of milk to 4, 8, 16, 20, and now she's thriving on her milk. Stoma is working well. And yeah, that's basically our story of Libby's Hirschsprung's disease.
Wow. I mean, I can't imagine how you felt, certainly with those first few days. And it's one subject I talk to a lot of parents about, where because Hirschsprung's obviously is the way it is, everything happens very, very early on. Most of the time, not all the time. But within those first you know, a few days, few even a couple of weeks, you're handing over your very small baby that's just been born, and everything that goes with giving birth as well. You've got all of those emotions as well, and then going straight into surgery. I can't imagine. I guess it's just one of those things that you just kind of have to do and get through, but it must be, yeah, I can't imagine how tricky that is.
I was sort of recovering in the post-labor ward, and when they had to move Libby over to Great Ormond Street, and they said to me, you have to sign here if you want to discharge us. Like, they said, you can either stay here or you can go with your baby to Great Ormond Street. And I said, that's not a choice. Like, what do you mean I'm going to sit here and recover, which obviously women have to do after birth, but what do you mean I'm going to sit here whilst my baby is being transferred to Great Ormond Street? I was like, of course I'm going to go with her. And they said, okay, you have to sign here because this isn't what we would advise. And I said, but this isn't a situation of, I'm just going to sit here and recover and put my feet up. And I've never experienced anything like this, obviously. But you go into like almost like lion mode. Like, I was like a fierce fighter of my daughter, who herself was fighting for her life. But you see this like little tiny helpless baby, and your own needs are just like, they're not even needs anymore, because you do that for your kids. And so that was all part of our journey. And then just sort of the next sort of part that comes with it is that when we were in Great Ormond Street, she has this hole in the heart that we know about in her pregnancy, plus also her Hirschsprung's disease, which initially they started saying scary things like maybe it's cystic fibrosis, because cystic fibrosis is associated with sticky meconium that can't pass. So there was, I kind of described the beginning, we were in Great Ormond Street for 32 nights in the beginning, and it was the craziest roller coaster I'd ever been on, with we think it's this diagnosis, we think it's that diagnosis. But they were able to confirm that it wasn't cystic fibrosis and it was long segment Hirschsprung's. So she has a large part of her bowel which is damaged. And when they fitted the stoma, the plan was that she'll have the stoma and she will then at some point have the pull through surgery, to basically connect the good part of her bowel to remove the damaged part of the bowel and then connect the good part to her bottom. And however, as the story unfolds, they sort of started coming to us and saying that a child with a heart condition and a bowel condition points us to maybe there's something bigger going on here. And immediately sort of sent off Libby's bloods for genetic testing. They sent off mine and my husband's. And when she was 1 month old, we found out that she has a very rare genetic syndrome, totally not connected to me or my husband, which is called Marek-Wilson syndrome. And the result of that, amongst many things that means for her life, is that probably her stoma will be there for life. So we're stoma fans for life, probably. But
definitely. I mean, I can't even imagine what the odds are of having Hirschsprung's, see, one in, depending on where you read, one in 5,000, one in 3,500 or whatever. Do you know roughly what the odds of Marek-Wilson syndrome is?
It's rare. I actually can't remember the figure. I was very careful about Googling stuff in the beginning. There's a lot of scary stuff out there on Google that is not there to give you any kind of like on the ground facts, that I was very careful. So I've not massively engaged with sort of figures and things like that. But it's definitely rare. I know of one other family in the UK with it. Whilst there are many more, just one that I personally met in 8 months. But it's definitely rare. And when I take Libby to the GP for a common cough, cold, whatever, they have no one has ever heard of Marek-Wilson syndrome. So it's definitely rare.
But to have that alongside Hirschsprung's as well, I mean, has got to be, I mean, one in God knows how many. I mean, that's got to be so, so rare.
Yeah. It's associated with Marek-Wilson syndrome is a lot of effect to your organs. So it makes sense that she has her heart condition. It makes sense that she has her Hirschsprung's. And it's definitely a more severe form of Marfan-Wilson syndrome to sort of have both of those things. But truth be told, when we realized that she had her heart condition and her Hirschsprung's and certain facial features, my husband did look up on ChatGPT, what does this look like? And it did say Marfan-Wilson syndrome. So when we got the phone call saying that there's Marfan-Wilson syndrome, there was a slight preparedness in ChatGPT. Although sometimes being the wrong place to turn to for advice in this moment did kind of prepare us for what was going on here.
I think it has its uses in certain circumstances. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that come from AI. There's a lot of things that we can just, instead of going through loads and loads of Google pages, we can just ask it, and you know, sometimes it's right, sometimes it's not. But it's, yeah, I mean, that can be quite useful to sort of, and I guess to prepare you as well as to what, you know, at least, because again, I'd never heard of Marfan-Wilson syndrome before I spoke to you. And I dare say a lot of people probably haven't either. So at least if you, again, might not know, you know, everything about it, but at least if you know the name of it, and then when the doctors say that this is what happens, or this is what has happened and been diagnosed, at least, again, I guess it's not come as so much of a shock.
Yeah, and I guess just if it's okay to just take this moment to just explain a little bit about Marfan-Wilson syndrome, because naturally when we got the diagnosis, I'd say I fell into a very dark, difficult hole, to put it politely. And we both like really, really, really struggled with it, because the idea of during my pregnancy was she's got this hole, she's going to get better and everything, she's going to live a normal life. But Marfan-Wilson syndrome is, there is a deletion on the ZEB2 gene, which I don't know much about that, but that is what it is. And it basically causes a effect of everything, basically. And it's crazy how one single gene can have such an impact on her life. So developmentally, children may or may not walk, children may or may not talk. There is a big spectrum. And I've seen some incredible stories of children walking when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, but really some may start walking at 7, 8, 10, not at all. So we fell into this hole, and it took us a little while to get out of it, I would say. But when we did manage to sort of see day again, me and my husband looked at each other and we sort of just said to each other, okay, this is what's going on. Let's give her the best possible life. Let's give her the best life possible, because what was quite reassuring is that children with Marfan-Wilson syndrome generally have a very happy demeanor. And that, to me, we both said to each other, as long as she's happy and she's not in pain, that's like all we could wish for at this point. And we started with a speech therapy, we started with physiotherapy, we started with a very specific type of therapy called Feuchstein therapy, and she is doing really, really amazingly and hitting certain milestones that doctors didn't think that she would hit, and she's doing really, really well. And I think that with this whole thing, a huge lesson that I've learned is something I knew already, that you can look at the glass as half full and you can look at the glass as half empty. And no one would fault me if I was to look at the glass as being half empty, because there's a lot of things that children with Marfan-Wilson syndrome will never be able to do. But she's also breathing and smiling and rolling at 5 months, and she's eating okay. And there's all these things that you can look at it and be like, wow. And every little thing she does, I'm so in awe of her, like so, so inspired by her. That I'm not saying it makes this whole thing easier, and I'm not saying at all I've come to a point of acceptance. I don't think you ever do come to a point of acceptance. I think I've come to the point of being amazed by her and also holding pain. You can sort of hold two emotions in one go.
Yeah, most definitely. And if, because obviously I came across you through Instagram, your Instagram of Growing with Libby, which is lovely, because there's so much joy on that page. And I know we've spent the last quarter of an hour talking about, you know, this diagnosis and that diagnosis, and this doesn't work and that doesn't work, and the heart condition and the etc. But what I love is that there's so much on there, like you said, with rolling And I mean, she does an awful lot of smiling, which is so good.
She was just the smile. And everyone that meets her is like, and I know I'm biased, I'm her mum, I think she's the best thing on this actual planet. But people that meet her that are not as connected to her as I am are like, when you hear a diagnosis and you see her in person, it's almost two different things. Like, I know she's still young and I sort of do have to brace myself for the future. And the truth is, when I do think about the future, that's when the deep dark hole reappears in my life. But actually, when I focus on today and I focus on how well she's doing today and how smiley she is today and how people just fall in love with her when they meet her, and there's so much to be grateful for. So, yeah.
Definitely. And that's the only thing you can do, I guess, is to focus on day by day. I mean, because like we said before, with a condition that's so rare, with not knowing many, if any, people who have all of those conditions together, there's not going to be as much research into what happens further down the line. Yes, you can, you know, use Dr. Google and kind of go, right, I guess my
Dr. Google. But in a way, it's, and people have said this to me, and I do agree with this, the fact that it's not that there's hundreds of thousands of people walking around with exactly the makeup that she's got means that there is so much room to continue working really hard, continue hope. Like, I met a family with Marfan syndrome in the beginning, and they said to me, Libby was like a month and a half old, and my husband wanted to meet another family of Marfan syndrome, which at the time I thought was a good idea. Turns out it was the worst idea ever. Because this family said to me that like people say early intervention, but really it doesn't really work. Like, don't waste your time on physio and don't waste your time on it. And in my mind, I was like, but that's my only lifeline, like in a way. That, and actually I've seen that it's not true. Like, we've worked so hard with her, and I truly believe that even though there may be limitations on where she can reach, I'm trying not to set limitations on her. And there is such a large spectrum that I hope that she'll be able to fulfill, be the best Libby that she could possibly be.
Yeah. But I think when you talk about limitations, I mean, I think everyone has limitations. Mm. You know, I'm never going to be able to run a 10-second 100 meter. I know that. I know that I'll never be able to do that. There's at least one of my limitations, and I think we've all got limitations, but it depends how you see it. You know, it's one of those things. Yes, and again, not a doctor, not medical advice in any way, but there will be some limitations with everybody. Yeah. But again, like you say, it's glass half full, glass half empty. Do you look at those or not?
Yeah, and she brings so much joy to people that she's around. It's reassuring to me that she'll never know that she's different, or never know that like there's something wrong with her. They're like happy. They're happy people that bring joy to other people, and hopefully she will live as pain-free life as possible, because that's really what you want. So and I'm going to scoot back to stomas for a second, if that's okay. I had never heard of a stoma before Libby. I definitely never heard of Hirschsprung's disease. And she was ready to be sort of discharged from the hospital. But they said, before you go, me and my husband both have to become sort of well-versed in stoma changes. And the first time I saw her stoma, and I'm embarrassed to say, but I'll say, I literally had to sit down. They had to get me a chair. I felt so faint. I thought to myself, I'm never, ever, ever going to be able to change her stoma. Never. I was like, envisioning in my head, I'm going to have to find someone else to do it. I'm never going to leave the hospital. Like, they're never going to let us go, because I can't possibly change the stoma, because it's too hard, it's too fiddly, and it makes me feel like, upset every time I see it, basically. Fast forward to now, and I'm pretty much changing stomas in my sleep. And I just learned a really crazy, I guess, life lesson from this whole thing, that the limitations we put on ourselves, I'm never going to be able to do this, I can't, etc. It doesn't exist. Like, it existed in my head that I can't do it. But as soon as I sort of was able to smash through that, and of course you can. And I think that, like, it's taught me so much in many other areas, with Libby, with not Libby, with other things in the last 8 months of what do you mean you can't do it? Like, what do you mean you can't run a 10-second? Like, what do you mean you can't run that? I think that, like, yeah, we don't even know what we're capable of until you're pushed into the situation where you have to, and then you've got no choice. And eventually I managed to pick myself up and learn how to do it. And then they said, okay, you can leave the hospital. And now I almost like laugh at myself that was ever something I struggled with. But yeah, so you just never know what you're capable of.
That's so true. That is so true. And especially when it comes to, you know, with Hirschsprungs and a lot of people I talk to about Hirschsprungs, you have to learn so much in such a short space of time, because quite simply, you don't have a choice not to. Yeah. And when people talk about stomas and changing stoma bags and et cetera, they have to, you know, you have to learn how to do that, because see, at some point you've got to leave the hospital. At some point they can't do it for you. And I totally understand that fear of going, I'll never be able to do this. I'll never be able to change stoma bag, or, you know, what happens if something happens to the bag, or what happens if, you know, there's a prolapse or whatever it might be. But you kind of find that inner strength, and you learn a lot, and you actually go, yeah, I can do this. I can. And like you say, that helps with a lot of other things in life.
Yeah. We become like doctors overnight, like advocates, doctors. Like, I really do feel that, like someone once said to me that with this whole experience, you mourn, you accept, and then you advocate. And at the time, I thought that was like I existed in three stages. And actually, the more I'm going on now, I feel like all three of those stages exist at the same moment, at the same time, every minute of the day. It's not like I've mourned, tick, I'm now accepting, tick, and I'm now going to just advocate, and no feeling of mourning or no feeling of accepting is going to come up. It's a constant daily process where I have constant triggers where I am even... There was a lullaby that was played 24/7 while she was in like the high dependency unit in Great Ormond Street, and a friend of mine has that lullaby to put her kids to sleep. Okay, it's like a lovely lullaby, but I hadn't heard that song since we were in Great Ormond Street, and I'm at her house and I hear this lullaby, and I like all of a sudden I'm like sort of panicking, and I'm right back there. So I just think that, like, yeah, there's constant triggers. But with the mourning and everything that has come with it, there's this fierce need to advocate for her. And I never had that before. I mean, my boys, of course, I would advocate for them, but it's not in the same way. And yeah, I think this whole process teaches you so much about yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you're absolutely right when it comes to triggers. I mean, you know, this people that I talk to, and even myself, you know, when I talk to people on here, and there's things that I've not thought about in 30 years that come up, and I go, oh, wow, yeah, I went through that. And it was, you know, and that was, yeah. And it becomes, yeah, it can be an interesting time when triggers come up. It can be an upsetting time, obviously, but it's things like the lullaby, and it can just be really, really simple things. It doesn't have to be anything major like seeing surgery or anything.
Brain line I used to take to go to Great Ormond Street, like little things. But it's also, I think, with this whole topic of Hirschsprungs and stomas, it's like quite a taboo topic. So obviously you're talking about, sorry to say it.
The clicksy people will on this podcast almost all the time.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Talk about it, but in a way, it is quite taboo. And whilst I was actually in Great Ormond Street, a family who we have sort of a mutual friend came to visit me, because her son is in year seven. So he's like 12, 13, has Hirschsprungs. And she came to visit me, and I couldn't get over how she was talking about poo so openly. Like, it was the first experience where I'd ever had, apart from my 4 and 5 year old boys who like to talk about poo all day long. But it was the first experience of like an adult talking to me about poo. And I was like, I felt so uncomfortable. I was so weird for me. And actually, like, this is my life now. Like, this is what I talk about. Like, I constantly, nurses will call me and they'll say, what color is her poo? What consistency is her poo? Like, this is like constant chat. And actually, it's like, to work on yourself, but like, it's natural and normal and should be spoken about, was like a journey also, in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people feel that way, certainly at the beginning, but then when it almost kind of becomes a large part of your life, you then go, well, it just becomes the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah. And it's sort of like reminding yourself that not everyone is there to, like, I'm saying, in that experience I had when I was on the other end, where this woman was like talking about it so openly about her son, and I was a bit taken aback. I'm now on the other side, and I have to remember that, like, when I talk about my libistoma with my friends, they may not also be on the same page of like, let's talk about this. Some of my friends really are. The ones that have been there since sort of day one, literally, I had people, my best friend and my sister-in-law, like, literally holding my hand through this whole thing. So there are some people that really will talk about the consistency of her stoma. But I say for the general public, it's still a topic that is not massively spoken about.
Yeah. And I think certainly I do. I don't know whether it's with other people as well, but live in this sort of bubble of Hirschsprungs. Sometimes when we go outside of that bubble and talk to people who have literally no idea what Hirschsprungs is, which I would say is probably 99% of the population, have got no idea what this thing is. And then when you talk to people about it, and you think, oh, actually, I'm going to have to re-explain everything, and can't talk about this and that and the other.
Quite lonely. That's quite a lonely feeling.
Yeah. I think having a rare condition is to a certain degree, because you can't necessarily talk to people just straight up about it. And also because people with Hirschsprungs, we don't display any outside symptoms, not really. I mean, you'd walk past, 100 people, you couldn't tell who's got Hirschsprungs or not. Absolutely no idea.
Thing about being compassionate to people, you have no idea what is going on inside someone's body, inside someone's brain. And you're right, like, you can walk past people and you have no idea, but you'd also have no idea the person that's struggling with mental health or struggling with, and I think so much unseen, that can be very isolating, can be very lonely, but also should, as a population, teach us a lot about being compassionate to people and being really kind to people. That's also a big thing I've tried to lean into with the experience.
Hugely. I think if in doubt, be nice.
Always be kind. I will just say sort of one more thing, if that's okay, about assertive.
Please.
After Libby's, after we were discharged from the hospital, we sort of have follow-up appointments, obviously, with her consultant to see how she's doing. And I get quite emotional in these appointments. However, stoma appointment, I was like, there's nothing to be emotional about. The stoma works. Everything's fine. I'm going to go to the appointment. I don't need anyone to come with me. I'm a brave person. I can do this on my own. I go and sit down for this appointment. And as I said, initially the plan was that she was going to have her stoma reversed, which I think was sort of a big kindness that in the moment, when she was going to have her surgery at 3 days old, it was like this is going to be temporary and then we're going to change it. Fast forward in this appointment with a consultant, I'm so brave because I'm sitting there by myself. She says to me, right, so we have been thinking that maybe we won't reverse the stoma, because really we have to think about Libby's future carers and whether adult nappies or adult stomas are more socially acceptable. And I'm like, I feel like I've been hit by a massive bus, because I'm like, but what do you mean? Like, she's going to get the stoma reversed, she's going to be fine. And in that moment, she basically explained to me that reversing a stoma and doing the pull through surgery can actually lead to quite a few complications, which I'm sure people have spoken about and maybe people know about here. But it's not a simple, you just do the pull through surgery, you connect the good part of the bowel to the bad part. Like, in my mind, sort of sound like Lego. That's sort of how I was explaining it to my older boys, that like you take this piece of Lego and you connect it this piece of Lego, and like all of a sudden it's just like it works. But she explained that's not always the case. And for Libby, who's going to have many other complications and difficulties and struggles, to have something that works, and we know works, and is in her mind maybe more socially acceptable, and I know this is a difficult topic to talk about and think about, but is more socially acceptable than adult nappies if Libby is not able to learn to use the bathroom by herself, then adult swimmers are sort of the way to go. By which time I walked out of that appointment, I said, I'm never, ever going to the appointment by myself ever again, because I'm clearly not as brave as I thought I was. And it took me time to grapple with this idea that the thing that I thought was going to be temporary is now maybe no longer going to be temporary. I asked her to find out if there are any other cases of Meltwater syndrome in Great Ormond Street that have had a stoma and then got it reversed, because I was curious of people's view. Because I don't know if you'll follow this, but in my mind, if we keep the stoma, we're not even giving her a chance to learn how to use the toilet by herself. And maybe she'd learn to do it, but I wouldn't know that because she has a stoma. And if we reverse, I would want to give her any more complications. Like, me and my husband Phil are two children making very, very adult decisions of whether we keep. But yeah, it's just another element of this life of having to make really big decisions for her, because she can't make them herself because she's 8 months old. So yeah, it's just, I've gone on a journey obviously with it, and I do feel accepting of the fact that she has a stoma, and I know many adults in my own life who have stomas. And again, it's something that you would never know about. You could walk past people on the street and have absolutely no idea. And someone even on, I think it was Good Morning Britain, went on and sort of changed their stoma on national TV, which I thought was so brave, but like a huge respect. And that's the kind of thing that I think we need to be doing, like raising awareness and things like that. But yeah, so that's just the next sort of chapter of our stoma journey.
Yeah, definitely. That is, yeah, like you say, going to that appointment and then everything sort of not quite going as you expected to, which can often be the case with Hirschsprungs especially, where, you know, you think it's going one way and it's gone the other way, and it's not always a linear process. I've spoken to plenty of people who talked about pull through with long segment, and actually they kept the stoma because they just said actually it's better than, you know, having, you know, just a small bit of bowel left and constantly having to go and whatever. So it's very much individual preference on that sense. But just as we sort of come towards the end, in terms of Libby, I know you've spoken a little bit about the next steps for her, and because, like you said, she's only eight months old. But in terms of Libby herself, she always seems very smiley, very happy. Is that sort of how she is day to day?
She cries when she's tired, and she cries when she's hungry, and that's it really. That they will do a surgery to remove the damaged part of her bowel, because they wouldn't want to keep with damaged bowel inside of her. But then the next step, which was going to be the pull through, will open. They'll keep the stoma there. But she is the happiest, most gorgeous, wonderful. And again, I know I'm biased, but she's just a very, very happy baby that is enjoying her food. And yeah, she's doing really well.
Fantastic. Well, if you can't be biased for your own children, who can you be biased for?
I know, guilty. But yeah,
brilliant. No, it's really good. Really, really good. And if anyone wants to follow you on Instagram, where can they follow you?
Yes, it's at Growing with Libby.
Brilliant. And there's so much really nice. Just if you just want some good, wholesome content of a smiley baby.
Positivity, trying to just raise the awareness And it's just, that's all we can do, really. We try, exactly. Trying our best.
Brilliant. Well, I thank you so much for coming on, especially at really short notice. And I wish see yourself, Libby, and the rest of your family all the very, very best for the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I have to also the room. Smile.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon. Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.